All right. It's 9 o'clock straight up at 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, where for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Good morning. It's time now for Talking Animals on KUCI.
My Thunderbird, put your head on my shoulder, don't say a word. We'll cut across town in my Thunderbird. There's a burial ground beneath a cattle herd. Mr. Henry Ford's building me a Thunderbird. My Thunderbird, my Thunderbird. Put your head on my shoulder, don't say a word. We'll cut across the county in my Thunderbird. We're from Pennsylvania, Welshmen of words. My daddy drove a DeSoto, I drive a Thunderbird. My Thunderbird, my Thunderbird. She's a voice of the future, baby, have you heard? Tomorrow's taking wing on my Thunderbird. My Thunderbird, my Thunderbird. Put your head on my shoulder, don't say a word. We'll cut across town in my Thunderbird. Got electric windows, tilt away wheels, slide across a bucket seat for that sexy little feel of my Thunderbird. My Thunderbird. Put your head on my shoulder, don't say a word. We'll cut across down in my Thunderbird. From the old Volkswagen back to the Model T, quite a lot of men have died just so you can ride with me. My Thunderbird, my Thunderbird. She drives like a dream, baby, rest assured. Don't get any better than a Thunderbird. My daddy was a salesman, my brother was too. I would sell anything just to try to stay with you, but not my Thunderbird. Oh, not my Thunderbird. Well, that woman's saying something, I can't hear a word. I'm going too fast in my Thunderbird. Take me on my way.
That's new music from John Hyatt with a song called Thunderbird as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. Streaming live on the internet, of course, as always, at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, the whole nine yards is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. Home, I hasten to add, with an animal show at the ready here, of the mighty anteaters, no less. My goodness. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number and call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls, and everybody's handled very gently and respectfully here, so there's no reason not to call in. But still, with all that, all those assurances made, if you say, hey, I don't really feel like calling in, or maybe you're listening online and there's only one line, you're doing the dial-up thing, you can instant message us. Come on, we're accommodating all needs here. We got our AOL Instant Messenger up and running, and the screen name is Talking Animals, so you can send us a little note or a comment or a question that way. And, of course, there's other ways that are less immediate to be in touch with us, include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. Or by way of our website, talkinganimals.net. And again, make no mistake, it's .net, folks. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another saucy, sassy, snappy edition of the Serena Sharp Show. Who doesn't love alliteration? I know we do. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our aforementioned, if I may use that word, website, talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast is archived. Clearly the heart of the program, if you'll see those archives, or if you listened before, or if you just take my word for it, is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today, our guest is Patrice Jones, co-founder of the Eastern Shore Sanctuary and Education Center, a Maryland sanctuary primarily for chickens, but also for ducks on a smaller scale, and the only sanctuary anywhere that I know of to rehabilitate former fighting cops. She's also an eco-feminist activist, a writer, a college instructor, and an enormously impressive scintillating speaker. Indeed, when I heard her on a panel at this animal rights conference in L.A. a few weeks ago, frankly, I didn't really know anything about her sanctuary or her other work. All I knew is that appearing on this panel titled Engaging Public Interest, Patrice presented a number of powerful, provocative ideas, and it was spectacularly inspiring and riveting in the way that she presented them. And I really wanted her to speak with her on the show. So sure enough, here she is today. It's Patrice Jones joining us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind you of the phone number to join us for any comments you might have on the news items we're about to present. But maybe also other things you'd like to say. Maybe there's a benefit, fundraiser or something for an animal-related group that you're involved with. Or just any other observations of the animal world you'd like to share. Any or all that would be most welcome. Again, the phone number is 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So, turning now to interesting and or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight. And with any luck, to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, as usual, with that preamble behind us, let's talk turkey, as it were. And this is now a good time to welcome. We have a visitor. It's our intern, David. Hi, David.
Hey there. How's it going?
Good. Welcome good to Talking Animals. David is in the midst of the KUCI training to get on the air with his own show of one kind or another. What kind of show might that be, David, if you had your druthers?
Well, we're definitely a PSA show. We're looking at some different things, a little bit of political talk, some religious talk, and some comedy as well. So we'll see.
Cool.
We'll see how all that balances out.
So it sounds like you already have a co-host in mind.
Yes.
Great.
Good old Brian Corbin out there, if he's listening.
All right, cool.
Wonderful,
so
man.
And he's going through training as well, I assume?
He's doing the same thing.
Yeah, great.
He's actually in Africa on a safari right now.
Is
so,
he really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so he'll be doing his
We should get him to call into Talking Animals then. My
right.
Goodness, that's the kind of guy we want to talk to on the air. But
that's
cool. Well, that's great, and so we will look forward to hearing David, and is it Brian you said? Or
what? Yes.
That's on the air, hopefully as soon as next quarter. And David's here, as part of the training, gets to observe and or do help out with different shows. So we're going to have him involved with the news a little bit, and otherwise kind of just hanging out. And so welcome to Talking Animals.
Thanks for letting me watch you.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, we'll get you more involved than just watching it somewhere along the line here. But we're going to jump right into the news, and As always, it's produced by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. And we're going to start with a piece we didn't get to last week when we just ran short of time, but still notable just because it's sort of an example of hoarding, you know, people that have, like, just too many animals, even if it's ostensibly on, you know, legitimate grounds, and then it's almost also got another level to it. Let me just start reading it, and then that'll, you know, either become more clear or I'll explain what I mean. So it's headlined, Shelter Accused of Keeping Too Many Chihuahuas. I took this from the LA Times, California section, I think it was July 19th. Again, yeah, we didn't get to it last week, so yeah. So it starts off, the little creatures snarl when they feel threatened, so do those who care for the curious breed of dog called the Chihuahua. Accusations were flying Monday in Burbank as dog lovers debated whether the operator of a nonprofit shelter is quote-unquote hoarding unwanted Chihuahuas instead of finding new homes for them. Former volunteers at Chihuahua Rescue were in Los Angeles Superior Court to demand that shelter founder Kimmy Peck be ordered to put 275 Chihuahuas up for adoption. They say the dogs are being held in filthy conditions at her Moss Street shelter. Their concerns were heightened when they learned that Peck, former daughter-in-law of the late actor Gregory Peck, shipped 100 of the Chihuahuas out of the jurisdiction of city prosecutors hours before the scheduled court hearing. Peck, a film writer and producer, has operated her Chihuahua rescue shelter in Burbank for 2 years. The Brentwood resident and former wife of Stephen Peck launched the shelter with proceeds from her 1980 Tatum O'Neill comedy Little Darlings and says she has spent $10 million of her own money on animal rescue work. Chihuahua Rescue has attracted support from such actors as Delta Burke and Mickey Rourke and has been the subject of positive coverage in People magazine's Dog's Best Friend and TV's Inside Edition. So here's the thing, though, where it gets tricky. 2 years ago, Peck helped coordinate the release of about 200 abused and neglected Chihuahuas who were impounded and scheduled to be destroyed after being seized in a 2002 raid on a breeder's home in Acton. We covered this on Talking Animals, you may or may not recall. Neighbors had complained that Chihuahuas were being housed in unsanitary conditions. Authorities found that the dogs had formed feral fighting packs and deemed them unsuitable for placement. I hope this will set a precedent, Peck said at the time. We have proven that these dogs can be saved. Well, the story goes on from there, but obviously what's happened now is that perhaps in taking on more than she was able to, I'm not sure what the reasons were, but that's got to be at least part of it, she's now finding herself in a very similar situation. There's just too many Chihuahuas there for her to care for properly. So we're going to follow the story very closely, but again, it's unless you have a full-blown sanctuary shelter with a lot of volunteers or other help, and it doesn't sound like she has enough help, you get right into the same situation that she was ostensibly rescuing those Chihuahuas from before. So, tricky. All right, this one is got a bit of an international flavor, not by much, but it's headlined, Monkeys Plague Puerto Rico, and it starts off from Toa Baja, Puerto Rico. When hordes of monkeys began invading Puerto Rico's farm fields, devastating crops, the major concern was trapping them before they reached urban areas, where they would pose a health hazard and be nearly impossible to round up. Fear is turning to outrage, authorities recently acknowledged, that a clan of the monkeys, escapees from a defunct medical research laboratories on the southern coast, had turned up about 20 miles from metropolitan San Juan, home to 1.5 million residents and countless hidden hiding places. Quote, it'd be very bad if these monkeys got to San Juan, Natural Resources Director Jose Chalbert said. His agency recently proposed capturing the wild monkeys because they carry diseases. Quote, I don't want to even think about having to trap monkeys there, Chalbert said. He added that fighting in the legislature was holding up funding for his $3 million effort to trap the monkeys. Primates, of course, are not native to Puerto Rico, but the island has been home to one monkey species since the 1950s when scientists brought them here for medical experiments. The animals, descendants of the patas and rhesus monkeys that escaped from research labs, are fertile and aggressive. So, story goes on from there. I think they got that from the AP. You can certainly find out more about that on The Wire. But any thoughts or comments, Dave, so far on either of the two stories?
Well, I you know, the Chihuahua story, I was thinking about there's a dog clinic I used to volunteer at with that, and that's totally right. If you get too many in there and they're just crawling around and not enough volunteers take care of them, it's a sad situation.
It really is, and it just escalates so wildly, unfortunately.
Yeah.
All right, well, here's something that's kind of a little more upbeat in the way that authorities kind of responded to sort of an odd situation. We'll just start right in. The little black bear showed up at the shady Switzer picnic area in the Los Angeles National Forest 2 weeks ago and immediately started looking for friends. When families sat down for barbecues at the picnic tables, the 18-month-old cub would lumber toward them, sniffing for food. It helped itself to pieces of hamburgers and potato chips left behind on tables and rummaged around in the trash bin. It stared, seemingly amused, at people who tried to scare it off with shouts. Quote, this one bear was getting, oh, very friendly with people, said Marty Dumfus, acting district manager for the area, who refused to give the male cub a name for fear of only increasing its popularity with visitors. When they get to that point, they're losing fear of people. In the past, the presence of a bear threatening people could prompt the rangers to bring in State Department of Fish and Game officials to shoot tranquilizer darts, or in extreme cases, real bullets, at wandering creatures. But this time, the rangers decided to try something different because the cub did not appear to be threatening people. They gated off the road to a picnic site northeast of La Cañada Flint Ridge, preventing visitors, many of whom bring large quantities of food, from driving in. Quote, we were trying to think outside the box, said Forrest. Spokeswoman Sherry Rollman, we were thinking if we could just curtail that, the bear can just return to the wild. Wildlife managers are hoping the cub, which they believed had just been kicked out of its mother's den, has figured out that there is no more food and has gone back into the mountains on its own. So kind of a very cool solution. Good for them. My hat's off to them, given, as they say, the other responses that typically a situation like that kind of generates. So, and let's see, it's time now for our mid-news animal quiz. And basically, it's a true-false question. And if you call in with the correct answer and the first to do so, we have a variety of prizes that you could win, including we have tickets to the Frost Dots at Detroit Bar. That's coming up on August 4th. I guess that would be, what, the Saturday of the 4th? Friday or Saturday.
Fourth?
Well, this is the first. I can't do the
first,
math, but
second,
it's very soon.
Somewhere coming up.
It's in a few days.
Coming up soon.
We can safely say that, yeah. But we also, as always, have, of course, animal-related prizes as well. We've got Talking Animals t-shirts, sweatshirts, and coffee mugs to choose from. We've got some books either by guests or people who may soon be guests, including, as I love to point out, we have a book by Shirley MacLaine. That is a guest, that is a prize, although she has not yet been a guest on Talking Animals, but we're hoping she will be at some point. But the reason it's a prize for this kind of quiz is that it's co-written by her dog, who has, a very nice literary style, we find. We've got t-shirts from other animal organizations, including Paws, with a cool little drawing of an elephant on the front that says animals don't belong in circuses. And cat toys, dog collars, leashes, etc. So if you're the first person to call with the correct answer to this quiz question, or later when we play Name That Animal Tune, you will have your choice of those prizes, including, again, the tickets, concert tickets to the Frost Dots Detroit Bar on August 4th, which we've determined is what day?
Did
we
determine? It's in the near future.
Right, okay, we're sticking with that.
The upcoming
All right,
future.
We don't want to get too more much more precise than that. Okay, cool. All right, so speaking of monkeys, as we were in the recent news item there, this question reads, Bonobo, a type of monkey, uses makeup sex to soothe emotions when fighting. True or false? Bonobo, a type of monkey, uses makeup sex to soothe emotions when fighting. 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI. If you think you know the answer, give us a buzz. You can have your choice of those fabulous prizes. All right, and getting now to something we periodically try to highlight here in the new segment of Talking Animals. It's the Animal Rescue Site, which is indeed a website. The address is the Animal Rescue Site, S-I-T-E, of course, .com. And essentially, if you can go there, and indeed you can and should every day, go to the site, and you'll, as soon as you get there, you'll see a section that says, click here to feed an animal in need. And that's exactly what happens through an arrangement they have with corporate sponsors and advertisers. If you do go there and you do click on that section, that frees up some dough to help either feed or care for abandoned, neglected animals in various shelters and sanctuaries. So it's really cool. There's no catch. There's no downside. So it's the animalrescuesite.com. Again, go every day, click on that section. The easiest way to do a good deed every day, as near as I can tell. Okay, so we got time for maybe another couple of items here, maybe. What's that?
Oh, no, it's great.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
I'm trying to read upside down here.
Well, yeah, I can barely read right side up, as we already have heard. But and here's something that's kind of neat. Let me just start. And this came from the Associated Press, and it's Dateline Juneau, Alaska. Waddling and snorting as they jockey for position on the rocks, the two-ton Wallaces may not be the prettiest of internet reality show stars, but two cameras installed at the Wallace Islands State Game Sanctuary off Alaska's southwest coast are giving scientists and web servers the chance to follow the drama of the mammals' everyday lives. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has installed the quote-unquote walrus cams on Round Island in the Bering Sea, giving online viewers a chance to see the walruses in their natural habitat on the Alaska Sea Life Center's webpage. And that's at alaskasealife.org/new/research/roundisland, roundisland.php. And you can just email us, talkanimals@aol.com, if you want to double check that link. But anyways, if you go there, you can see, and they have a little picture, accompanying photo, of just dozens, at least, maybe more, walruses all clumped together, and their big crazy tusks hanging out and stuff. It's really, really cool. So anyway, that's kind of a nice little thing to check out when you're, again, online. After you've gone to the animal rescue site and clicked on that spot, then you can head over and see the walruses. We got a full day for you mapped out. All right, so let's see. Maybe one more quick item here. Especially because this kind of harks back to a story we covered a while back here on Talking Animals. An expert on the ivory-billed woodpecker is questioning evidence that purportedly shows the rare bird, once thought to be extinct, in the swamps of southeast Arkansas. Jerome A. Jackson, a zoologist at Florida Gulf Coast University, is challenging a blurry video that other scientists say shows one of the birds, saying the four-second clip does, quote, no more than suggest the possibility, end quote, that the bird still exists. Jackson has written a paper with two other biologists, but would not discuss its details until the research is published. So, is it back or is it not back? The debate continues. And lastly, biologists have discovered a new species of caterpillar in the Hawaiian rainforest that ensnares snails in silken webs, then feasts on them until nothing but the shell is left. It's the first time such behavior has been documented in caterpillars or any members of its biological order, Lepidoptera, which includes moths and butterflies. Quote, it was like finding a wolf that dives for clams, said University of Hawaii biologist and entomologist Daniel Rubinoff, who reported the discovery with William P. Haynes, a biologist at the university, in Friday's edition of the journal Science. Though all caterpillars have silk glands, this species is the first to be seen using theirs like a spider does. And though nearly all Lepidopterans are vegetarians, quote, this caterpillar wouldn't sample foliage even if it were starving, Rubinoff said. So, it's kind of an unusual finding. We try to mix it up here in the animal news section of Talking Animals. So, any other comments, Dave, before we move along?
Well, I was just thinking, hopefully those monkeys that escaped from the lab don't get in, you know, start biting the caterpillars. You'll have
further.
Giant man-eating caterpillars.
Right, we'll have
on
our own
hands.
Sci-fi film if we're not careful. Yeah.
Sci-fi all over today.
That's it. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, that's going to do it for today's likely edition. Unless we have a little time at the end of the show, we'll come back to some items we didn't have time for today. But otherwise, that's it. But either way, if there are ever any news stories or announcements of events that you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@aol.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email, again, is talkinganimals@aol.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, maybe redundantly, maybe not, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site, talkinganimals.net, again, .net, and sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of just about every show we've ever done, sort of photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces and more. So please stop by and take a look around again. It's TalkingAnimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Sabrina Matthews with a snippet of a piece called Kitty Confusion on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
My mother's actually a brilliant woman with a somewhat tenuous grasp on reality. My mother was one of the first women in the United States to purchase a microwave oven, and she still will not leave this thing plugged in overnight. Because she has these cats, and she is convinced that one of them is going to punch in a cook sequence, get inside of the thing, pull the door shut behind itself. And then one of the other cats, acting out a suicide pact, will hit start. Once the first one's locked inside. Like Kitty Kevorkian.
All right. That was Sabrina Matthews in the Comedy Corner with a piece called Kitty Confusion. The Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way. And some of you, perhaps a subset, even, arrive through our small website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that our guest today is Patrice Jones, co-founder of the Eastern Shore Sanctuary and Education Center, a Maryland sanctuary primarily for chickens, but also for ducks, and the only sanctuary of its kind to rehabilitate former fighting cops. She's also an eco-feminist, activist, writer, college instructor, and an enormously impressive, scintillating speaker. Indeed, as I noted earlier in the show, when I heard her on a panel at this National Animal Rights Conference in LA a few weeks ago, frankly, I didn't know that much about her sanctuary or her other work. All I knew is that appearing on this panel entitled Engaging Public Interest, Patrice presented a number of powerful, provocative ideas, and did so in a really riveting way, and so I just thought, I want to speak to her on the show. We'll find out what else she does then, or before, but so anyways, I'm very delighted to welcome Patrice Jones to Talking Animals. Are you there, Patrice?
I am, Duncan, but uh-oh, what a build-up. I cannot live up to it.
All right, shall we call it an interview? Thanks so much, and we'll just leave it there? That's good. No, but I probably have a ridiculous amount of ground to that I hope to cover, so let's just jump in and cover as much of it as we can. And I thought maybe we should just start at least briefly at the beginning or darn close, like where you grew up, how far back would you trace your love of animals and your activism, and then we'll sort of proceed from there.
Well, I grew up in Baltimore City, which is a port city on the East Coast. I stopped eating animals when I was 15 years old in 1976, which is also the same year that I came out and joined the then very new gay liberation movement. Now, back then, it was cool to be a vegetarian, but lesbians were looked on as some kind of sex-crazed perverts. Now, it's cool to be a lesbian, and vegetarians are looked on as sexless prudes.
I see.
So, it's been kind of interesting to be me.
Yeah, so you kind of passed yourself on one path, you know, here I'm a freak here, and now, you know, ostracized, and now I'm on the other side of the ostracized street, I guess. Yeah.
Either way.
Yeah.
Either way. Even though I did become a vegetarian when I was a teenager, I didn't really think about the connections between animal issues and social justice issues very much until I was well into my 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So while I was an activist for most of my adult life, except for a brief period when I was just too busy going to school and working,
mm-hmm.
I was doing work on racism, I was doing work on poverty, I was doing work on AIDS, war, you name it. And I wasn't eating animals, and if I ever had a few dollars to spare, which wasn't very often, I would throw them to an animal organization since I wasn't doing any of my work in that area.
Sure.
But I really thought about animal concerns as being almost on a separate plane of existence to human concerns, which is, I think, how most social justice activists think about them.
Mm-hmm.
But there did finally come a time when I came to understand that, in fact, the exploitation of animals and the exploitation of women are linked at the root. They appear on the historical record at the same time. They form the pattern that was then used for every other form of exploitation that we've seen ever since. And there's no way to untangle them. So it became clear to me that human liberation and animal liberation were in fact inextricably linked, and that I would need to integrate that awareness into my activism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as somebody who'd been doing social justice work, I was already used to really thinking about how does race and class work together? How do race and sex intersect with one another?
Mm-hmm.
And so then this became just an additional task of connecting the dots.
Well, in fact, that's the exact phrase that I had made a note to myself for sort of later when we had already talked about the sanctuary, but maybe we should flip it around and you know, keep going on the path that we're on. I mean, either way, I certainly want to spend at least a few minutes talking about the sanctuary and all the work that's going on there, but you know, we can sort of book in
it
or however you want to do it.
It's all connected, because having that realization that my partner and I happened to find ourselves here in this rural region, where we are in an epicenter of poultry production, we actually accidentally moved into the area where factory farming of chickens was first invented. And we live on a little peninsula where they kill anywhere from 10 to 15 million birds every week.
Mm-hmm.
And there are factory farms right on our road.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't here but a few weeks when we happened to find a chicken in a ditch.
Yeah.
And we picked him up. We brought him home. Actually, we thought he was a she.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, your listeners won't have time for the comedic story of us thinking that this rooster was laying eggs.
But that's
it became
that's
very
fun.
Clear to us that we were going to have to do something for the birds here.
Right.
And that gave us the opportunity to then put into practice these things that we had been already thinking about the connections between animal work and human work.
Sure. And just to kind of back up for one sec, because
sure.
I think that move that sort of preceded discovering this chicken that was turned out to be the rooster, which turned out, by the way, to be named Viktor Frankl, if I'm not mistaken. But
that's right.
Yeah. But you guys had previously lived in Michigan, and where I think you were pursuing a PhD and some of those things. And in fact, just because it does all connect, one of the things I really thought was interesting too, because of your sort of lifelong work as an activist. At one point, weren't you, well, maybe indeed while you were pursuing your PhD, weren't you teaching a class in social change activism, some kind of activism, and then it got canceled on you because of your activism or something? Or?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really lucky. Because I was teaching a course in the theory and practice of social change, which actually then made it my job to think about different activist movements, learn about different activist movements, really think deeply about what works, what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Too often as activists, we just sort of go in a very knee-jerk direction. We do whatever feels like it might work, or we say the things that convinced us, trusting, hoping, assuming that that's going to move other people, and maybe it won't. So I really had the opportunity to step back and learn a lot about what a lot of different people, not just in the United States, but all over the world, have done to try and change things in their communities and in their cultures. And that was really very useful to me. But yes, there did come a time when I did an action concerning a regent at our university. He was sort of the local equivalent of Jesse Helms, extremely conservative, extremely homophobic, and he had made some outrageous comment or another. I don't even remember what it was.
Yeah.
And I and an organization with which I worked went and picketed his house, something that the folks at Shack have been getting a lot of in a lot of trouble for doing. Shack being Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
We picketed his house and actually ended up having a kiss-in on the sidewalk.
Cool.
In front of his house, and it was all very fun, and the newspaper came out, and we achieved our aim of just getting a little attention to this outrageously homophobic thing that he had said.
Mm-hmm.
But as it turned out, within a week, he had a course listing of my course and was waving it around and insisting that I had given my students extra credit to protest him, which was not true. None of my students had been there.
Mm-hmm.
And the course was then canceled.
Sure, just looking for a way to get rid of that that feisty Patrice Jones.
There you go.
Yeah. Wow.
It was kind of devastating, really. I can joke about it now, but I really really love teaching. I teach public speaking now at a local college, but that course was a real loss. Luckily, what happened was that so many of my students protested the firing of me and the cancellation of the course that after just a one semester pause, they did bring something like the course back. They had to name it something else and
right.
do some other things.
And get a new instructor.
Cover the tracks.
Right.
But
yeah.
at least that learning was still going to go on.
Yeah, just not with Patrice Jones at the
there
helm.
You go.
Yeah, I gotcha. And are you still even slowly but surely still working on that PhD, or is there so many things now that you're involved with that that's kind of had to be set aside for the time being? Or
I'm not so interested in the PhD
mm-hmm.
as a degree. I
yeah.
am working on the book that
okay.
was my dissertation,
yeah.
and I will. I'm actually finishing up a memoir right now about starting the sanctuary.
Oh, wow.
But once that's all done and taken care of and published, then I'm going to turn back to the book that was my dissertation, which very much involves the linkage between animal exploitation and exploitation of women.
Oh, great.
And people.
Okay, well, again, we'll get into a bit more of that in a moment or two. But just, so now that we're sort of, so for whatever reason, you ended up moving from Michigan to Maryland.
There you,
you
go.
You landed here, you got a nice little hunk of land, and then, lo and behold, hey, we're in poultry territory, and hey, here's this bird in the ditch. What are we going to do? And then, really, I mean, I guess that was, what, about five years ago this summer?
It was a little more than 5 years
yeah.
ago. And we called around, and the local animal shelter told us we could have a nice dinner with the chicken that we found.
Okay, seriously?
And we did know about United Poultry Concerns, which is actually only about a couple hours south of us, but we were very confused about the geography of it all, so we thought they were a lot further away, luckily,
mm-hmm.
Because we might have just driven the bird down there if we had
mm-hmm.
understood that.
Yeah.
So we took this bird in, and I just ended up falling for her.
Mm-hmm.
As we thought.
Right, initially, when it wasn't her.
I had
yeah.
never really thought about birds very much. I appreciated them from a distance, but I always assumed that people and birds couldn't have very close relationships because there's just too much of a difference between mammals and avians.
Mm-hmm.
But spending time with this bird who would hang around on the back steps and wait for me to come out and follow me around as I was doing my chores. We would bring her inside on the cold night so that she wouldn't get frostbite on her coma wattle out in the unheated garage, and we didn't have any place for her, so we would set up some straw in the bathtub.
Wow.
She would sleep in there, and of course you're coming in and out of the bathroom all the time doing your thing. And so this brought me into rather intimate relationship
sure.
with this chicken, and
yeah.
I started noticing all sorts of things, like their feet are just so much like our hands. They have the little sections on their fingers and the little pads on what's like the palm.
Mm-hmm.
And her eyes looked like my grandmother's eyes, and her
wow.
personality was an awful lot like my grandmother's, stubborn but charming.
Yeah, okay.
And I just fell for this bird. So then we told the local Humane Society, if somebody else finds a chicken, you tell them to come to us, or we'll come and get that chicken. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly after that, we had the opportunity to actually go behind the chicken catchers at a local farm and pick up the birds they had left behind, who would otherwise have been killed. And this was with the farmer's permission.
Sure.
After that, we said, well, we had never been able to explain to people why we were moving to this rural region, and it became clear that why we had moved to this rural region was apparently to start this sanctuary.
Sure, yeah, it all makes sense. It all makes sense in retrospect. Yeah. Well, let me just tell our listeners, this is Talking Animals on KECI. We're speaking with Patrice Jones, co-founder of the Eastern Shore Sanctuary and Education Center. Sanctuary, as we're hearing, for chickens in Maryland. She's also an eco-feminist, activist, writer, educator. If you'd like to join the conversation, have a question for Patrice, please give us a holler, 949-824-5824. So, okay, well then maybe, so it's a little more than 5 years ago, maybe you could give us an overview of the sanctuary as of August 1st, 2005. I mean, how many chickens and ducks for that matter, and what sort of goes on there in a given day, and...
Okay. We have our population hovers anywhere from between 175 to 200 birds.
Mm-hmm.
It varies so much because a number of our residents are the so-called broiler chickens who are raised for meat by the local industry,
mm-hmm.
and who people find by the side of the road. Those birds have a host of health problems, and they don't live very long. So our attrition rate for them is unfortunately very high. We had to learn in our first year to love them for as long as they're with us,
mm-hmm.
and let it go at that.
Yeah.
We have mostly chickens, as you say. We do have about a dozen ducks
mm-hmm.
here. We have, as I said, the local broiler chickens.
Mm-hmm.
We have hens from egg factories. We have roosters from everywhere because most sanctuaries are very limited in the number of roosters they take.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them end up here. And we are, as you said in the introduction of me, the only sanctuary, though we're hoping that will change, to rehabilitate former fighting cocks.
And how does that, at least just briefly, Patrice, how does that actually work? That seems like a tall task, which I'm sure is why other sanctuaries haven't yet sort of said, okay, well, let's take it on nonetheless the way you guys have. But what is really involved in rehabilitating those?
Well, it's shockingly simple, and that's why we want more people to do it.
Yeah.
We got into it because we had taken in at one point about 24 roosters who had been living in an unofficial sanctuary in Pennsylvania. They were all roosters who'd been saved by a woman who had been a humane officer, a animal control person,
mm-hmm.
and who had just kept the roosters who she couldn't find homes for over the years. But then she lost her land, and nobody would take these roosters, many of whom were former fighting cocks, but all of whom were living peacefully together. Nobody would take them but us. So we took them, and they moved in without incident. And, of course, they were already peaceful by the time they got here, but that taught us, these birds aren't necessarily inherently aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're good feminists. We're used to understanding that ideas that we have about gender may not be true. Ideas that we have about what's naturally masculine and naturally feminine may not be true.
Mm-hmm.
So we were open to the idea that this whole concept that fighting roosters are inherently aggressive might not be true.
Mm.
And it turns out not to be true. Fighting cocks fight because they have been terrorized and traumatized into seeing other roosters as predators.
Sure.
And fighting them as if they were predators. In the wild, roosters may tussle with one another to establish their pecking order, but no real injury is done, and they certainly never fight to the death. Roosters will, however, very honorably fight to the death to protect chicks.
Right.
Or to protect the flock, or to protect themselves. So what cockfighters do is they, through isolating and frustrating the birds while they're being raised so that they never learn the normal social signals chickens use to maintain the peace among
mm-hmm.
themselves, and through drug use at the times of fights, and through various other mechanisms, they essentially trick these birds into seeing each other as predators
mm-hmm.
and fighting to the death because they're afraid.
Yeah, they're basically reprogrammed by trauma, pretty
much.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah,
as so many of us have been.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So, all that we do is take the birds through a process where we help them to be less afraid.
Mm-hmm.
When a fighting cock arrives at our place, he is so scared every time he sees another bird. His little heart pounds,
mm-hmm.
and his eyes dilate, and you can just tell. If you're not blinded by stereotypes about aggressiveness,
mm-hmm.
then you can see so easily this bird is terrified. This
right.
bird isn't aggressive. This bird isn't angry. This
right.
bird is scared.
Yeah.
So we spend, at first the bird spends a little bit of time in a nice safe carrier where he can hear the other birds and just get used to the sounds here. You may have been hearing them in the background. There's a lot
mm-hmm.
of yelling.
Yeah.
There's
lots
of
cool
sound.
Action in the background. Yeah.
So a day or two there. Then, and also getting used to us.
Mm-hmm.
So then we take a period where we take the bird out of the carrier, hold him to our chest, let him be calm, then carry him to where he can see the other birds. His little heart starts to pound, but we keep him held tight. We pet him. We soothe him until he gets to the point where he can actually see the other birds without having that elevated heart rate.
Mm.
Once he reaches that point, then it's time to let him down onto the ground.
Mm-hmm.
same sort of process.
Yeah.
Set him onto the ground, but at some point he'll freak out, he'll start a fight.
Mm-hmm.
We scoop him back up, and then we put him not away from the other birds, but in a nice spacious cage where he's got food and water and where he can see and interact with all the other birds, but not attack or be attacked by them. We also put food all around his cage so that the hens and the juvenile roosters will come around and socialize with him, and he won't be isolated. We've never had it take longer than 3 weeks of keeping the bird in that sort of cage, taking him out several times in the course of the day, letting him walk around free until he starts a fight, picking him back up, soothing him, putting him back away, before he's calm and ready to live with everybody else.
Wow. And you know,
usually it takes less than 3 weeks.
Yeah. And
sometimes
you know,
it just takes a few days.
And as you were describing it, in a weird way, what it kind of sounded, or at least certain elements of it sounded like to me is, I mean, we have a what was once a feral cat who the vet that when we found it, whatever, said, oh, that's great, but, never domesticated. And, of course, now it's a happy member of the family. But it sounds a lot like, in some of the key ways at least, the same process. I mean, feral cats usually can't even get near, much less, hey, they're always fearful. But, I mean, gradually, if you kind of introduce things and know that there's going to be some backsliding, et cetera, I mean, now this cat could not be sweeter and nicer.
It is in part a process of systematic desensitization of introducing the animal to what he's afraid of,
mm-hmm.
Slowly in a way so that he won't be afraid.
So it's not too much.
But in our instance, it's also a process of, it's like the opposite of domestication, because it's
right.
sort of like
right.
letting nature
returning him back
come
to,
back.
Right,
he
yeah, to the original instinct.
He has been deprived of his natural socialization
right, yeah.
with other animals.
Of course.
But we do things to set it up so that he can learn the signals that birds use,
right,
learn all the things he didn't learn when he was a chick.
Right, get back to being a regular old
and
rooster.
And get back to just being a bird. That's
cool.
Right.
Well, Patrice, in our remaining time, I want to tell people, first of all, that there is a great website. Bravebirds.org is the website for the sanctuary, where you can learn a lot more about the work and about the chickens and the some of the stuff that Patrice just described about the fighting conflict rehabilitation. And, for example, surprising, or what may or may not be surprising tidbits, including that I didn't know that chickens enjoy spaghetti. And there's all kinds of little interesting tidbits there. So we want to urge people to go to that site, but I'm hoping that we can also, in our remaining time, kind of go back to what we started in terms of connecting the dots. And one other thing, too, speaking of the website, like a lot of sanctuaries, especially smaller ones, Eastern Shore Sanctuary and Education Center does rely on donations and the kindness of strangers, if you will. So, again, go to that site, and I think at one point it makes it clear that, like, $5 goes a really long way.
That's right. $5 supports a bird for a month.
Yeah, so that's really cool. And also, there's this great blogging for chickens thing that's about to go on. I don't know if you want to say one quick thing about Virgil Butler and the blogathon, but I thought that was really cool, too.
Absolutely. Virgil Butler, who is a former poultry worker down in Arkansas, once named the best poultry killer in Arkansas, is going to be participating in the annual blogathon for charity, and he's designated us as his charity, so that sponsors will sign up to sponsor him. He's going to have to blog for 24 hours, make a blog entry every half hour, staying up all night to do it.
Mm.
And so this man who used to kill chickens for a living is going to be blogging around the clock to save chickens' lives.
I think that's so cool.
Yeah, we feel great about that. And you can learn more about that at the blogathon.org website, or by writing to us.
Yeah.
From our website, and we can direct you to where you need to go if you want to sponsor him.
Yeah, it sounds really cool, and I would urge people to do that. So as consuming as the sanctuary is, though, it represents only really, as we've kind of touched on, one aspect of your work, and really, again, for you and for many years, everything has really been connected. And, and one of the kind of hallmarks of your written work and your talks is that people who care deeply about animals shouldn't and can't really compartmentalize that away from other important causes. What's important is a much broader, deeper view that sees and makes connections really between animal liberation movement and other movements. Can you kind of go back to maybe where we just started on earlier and explain a bit how you indeed connect those dots and how we should, if we're not doing it as much yet?
sure. I mean, there's so much to say about that. So
I know, that's like a three-hour question in 5 minutes.
Please go to our
website,
click on the, we've got sections about sexism, about racism, about environment. If you go to our archive section, you'll find all kinds of articles about different issues. What I would say is this to animal, to folks who focus on animals, and it's this. If we're really serious about the idea that people are animals and that there's no moral distinction between human and non-human animals, and that's really the basis of our argument to other people, if we're really serious about that, if we mean what we say, then we must, by definition, be as concerned about the exploitation of human animals as we are about the exploitation of non-human animals. We must be as concerned about the 1 million or so girls held in sex slavery in Asia for the pleasure of European men who travel there, specifically for the purpose of raping little girls, as we are about the hens who are caged in egg factories in cages so small that they can't move. In both instances, what we have are female animals enslaved so that their reproductive parts can be exploited in a very painful way for both profit and pleasure of very powerful men. We have to be as concerned about rape in the fraternity hall as we are about rape on the dairy farm, and just as concerned about torture in Guantanamo Bay as we are about torture in the vivisection lab. This seems self-evident to me. And I would say that, of course, it goes the other way as well. We need people who are concerned about these social justice issues, who are concerned about poverty and concerned about racism and concerned about militarism, to understand that the roots of these kinds of violence, these kinds of violations of people, are deeply, deeply rooted in our original exploitation of earth and animals. And women. And I say and women, and some animal people say, what? What? How is that all? But if you look back at the historical record, we can't really say which came first, because the taking of women as property and the taking of animals as property, they appear at the exact time in the historical record, in the exact same society. You don't find a society that held women as slaves that didn't also hold animals as slaves, and vice versa. So we can't really say which of those came first. As far as I'm concerned, they're two sides of the same coin. It's all about taking an animal, depriving that animal of her reproductive freedom, depriving that animal of her freedom of movement, and using that animal's body for your profit and pleasure.
And along those lines, Patrice, I mean, one of the things that, again, I was struck by on the panel that heard you at the conference was your five-item list. Not necessarily, because unfortunately, sadly, we're probably running out of time for that. But just dropping down, because this, what you were just saying reminded me of the fifth item, which is go vegan. But I mean, compared to when most people say go vegan, which of course really, at least on a surface level, just means in a dietary sense, and of course in some level that's what you mean it as well, but what also struck me is that it means so much more than that. And maybe
absolutely,
you could just address
go vegan
it. Yeah.
Means it's a process, it's not a finished state, and it means not participating in any exploitation of any animal. It also means you have to be green as well, but it also means you can't participate in sexism, you can't participate in racism, you can't buy things from sweatshops, etc. And of course, none of us are perfect. We're all colluding all the time in evils that we don't want to be colluding in, but the best, but we can try really hard not to. I would also just add, of the 5-point plan that you were enamored of, probably the most important point is what I call the golden rule of activism. And that is that you must be at least as open to changing yourself as you would like other people to be. If you're going to be telling people to change their diet or to change what they wear, the least you can do is listen to what they have to say about, oh, I don't know, the words you use or where you buy your shoes. So if we all could do that on whatever issue is our primary issue, if we all could be at least as open to changing ourselves as we would like other people to be, and quit minimizing other people's issues, then we're going to go a long way.
Yeah. Well, along those lines, and probably just because we're, I guess, really literally at the end of our time here, but one other thing that might kind of, add a nice little final button to this is, you know, in your talk you delivered in April at the opening night of the first grassroots animal rights conference in New York City, one point sort of about, you know, along the lines of connecting these dots, you say, you know, we must take responsibility for ending human exploitation of the earth and other animals, just as men must actively support women in the struggle against sexism, and white people must work hard to divest ourselves of the illegitimate power and privilege that come with being white. So, I mean, that in a handful of words, I mean, that's you know, that connects those dots, I think, in a way that's accessible to anybody.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, well, I mean, no, but I just mean for 'cause some of these ideas that I think are, you know, a little harder to grab onto than others, but, I mean, it's important that we all make that effort, and that's why also your golden rule is so essential as well, because it's like, hey, I don't quite know what Patrice is saying there, but here's what something I feel strongly about. Maybe I should kind of, like, you know, lean her direction and find out more.
Absolutely.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. Well,
trust, I'll listen to you, too.
Great. Well, that's exactly. We're golden ruling everywhere now. But so again, Patrice Jones, thank you so much. The website one more time is bravebirds.org, and again, all kinds of her writings and talks and lots of other resources are there, and importantly, the ability to donate very simply, which I really would urge people to do. I mean, they're doing great work at the sanctuary, but as we've heard, you know, great work well beyond that, all kind of, you know, it's very interconnected. So it's the Eastern Shore Sanctuary and Education Center. Patrice Jones, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Take care now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, so one more time, I want to thank Patrice Jones and for joining us in Talking Animals. And really, the website is just chock full of info. And, you know, some things may or may not be, again, more, you know, immediately sort of accessible that we touched on. But, I mean, if you go there and just sort of snoop around and just pull up different parts of her writings and talks and just some of the other resources and just find out more about the sanctuary, which is, it's a pretty amazing story in itself, as we heard a bit of just now. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You're all listening to Talking Animals on KUCI and Irvine 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. It's time to play Name That Animal Tune. And again, it's like any other Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except, of course, in this game, the tunes are always animal-related. So I will play a snippet of this animal-related tune, and as soon as you can identify it, call in to 949-824-5824. If you're the first person to do so, you'll have your choice of those prizes we mentioned earlier, including tickets to the Frost Dots at Detroit Bar on August 4th, 21 and over show, but otherwise, if you guess and you want those tickets, they're yours. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI.
Hi, I think it's Little White Duck.
That's correct. Who's this?
My name's Marie.
And where are you calling from, Marie?
Anaheim.
Cool. Do you have any animals that live with you?
Yeah, I have two cats and a monkey.
Wow. All right. Well, I don't know about the monkey part. That's got me concerned. But luckily, we're out of time, so we won't get into that. But just email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com, and we will figure out what your prize is and how to get it to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and congratulations on winning Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. And let's figure that we're just about at the end of our this week's edition of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. So I want to again thank our guest Patrice Jones for joining us on Talking Animals. Sanctuary is Eastern Shore Sanctuary and Education Center, and the website is bravebirds.org. I hope you'll join us next Monday, August 8th, when our guest will be Paul Watson, a truly legendary figure in the animal world who co-founded Greenpeace and went on to found the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society's lifelong activism has been primarily devoted to defending all creatures of the sea, and he's been recognized globally in all kinds of ways for this, including that in 2000, Time Magazine named him one of the environmental heroes of the 20th century. So again, hope you'll join us for that next Monday, August 8th, here on the Talking Animals. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include just today alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m., we're off with Counterspin, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like this each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning, then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. I also have a music show called The Dead Air Zone right here on KUCI. It's Tuesdays, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's a wildly eclectic mix of music, covers, and comedy. I hope you'll check it out. And again, I want to urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net. When you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also, I encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, news stories, and anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great, great, great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're going to close things out here with an animal-related tune. This is Split Lip Rayfield with a song called Tiger in My Tank on KUCI. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals.
Well, I had a call to withhold drink. Still have some tiger in my tank.